And again, we have three different kinds of people. I like to mix them up that way because it shows, I think, that people who have different positions and different philosophies of life still focus on many of the same issues and come to the same conclusions on so many topics. But so many others can't get there because they have too many walls in front of them, you know. And so I like William Sloan Coffin's quote here, kind of an interesting one. We are beginning to resemble dinosaurs who suffered from too much armor and too little brain. I think that in many ways, metaphorically speaking, describes the world in which we live today. I know, for example, in the nation of Russia, they have a huge army, but they have an economy that is pitiful, and they don't care about the people. But they want to be a powerhouse. They want to be a powerhouse, and their military is of prime importance. And then they have their oligarchy that governs it all, with the oligarch of all oligarchs on top of that, Vladimir himself. So I enjoy that little phrase, beginning to resemble dinosaurs. And they, you know, they got too big and busy for themselves. Then Albert Schweitzer. Everybody knows Albert Schweitzer. Those among you, he says, who will be truly happy are the ones who have sought and found how to serve. And he's right. I don't know about you, but when we help somebody and it works out, you know, and it doesn't always work out. Sometimes we run into difficulties. But when it works out and you see some progress in them, it's amazing how you feel about it. I remember years and years ago, there was a young girl who played basketball for the Catholic high school at which my daughter taught. And it was, she was a very good student. She was really very funny. She was a basketball player on the girls' team. That's how I got to know her. I followed the girls' team all over. And then all of a sudden, she was going to be kicked out of school because she couldn't afford the tuition. She came from the west side of Dayton, which is a segregated community, as you can gather, and so on. And her father asked me if I could do anything to help. So I told him I'd see what I could do. We helped that girl. She never knew about it, never told her about it. She graduated from the school. She got a basketball scholarship to Michigan State University, and she played for 4 years at Michigan State University. She graduated and is now a successful businesswoman. But every once in a while when I think about going to those games, I think about her and all the girls that played. And some of them were from very wealthy families, others were not. And so you never know how you can help somebody make that leap into the next phase. I keep tabs on her every once in a while, see how she's doing. And she's doing well. Her father was a Vietnam veteran who had his stomach blown out. And he was in very bad shape, and he has since passed away. And then, from the American poet, Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou is a great poet. And, lift up your eyes upon this day breaking before you, she says. Give birth to the dream. Give birth to the dream. We have ideas in our minds and so forth. We know many things that are good. And she is encouraging us. Give birth to that. And let it grow. And you'll be surprised at the results that occur. So those are my thoughts for the week here. And I hope you enjoy them and think about them. And you don't always have to agree with them. But that would make for a nice conversation. Oh, here we are again. I can't believe it's already March. and March 1st, and we have communion here. And I want to share some thoughts about Jesus' fourth word from the cross in connection with communion. And it's a very, very difficult word. It's really kind of funny because this week, this past week, I think it was maybe Thursday, and I had already gotten my ideas together, you know, for Sunday and so forth. Although it's never finished. It's never finished. It's always an ongoing process. And I was making breakfast. Ha ha. Believe that, you know. And I can make breakfast. I whipped up some scrambled eggs, and I had the TV on some news program. And all of a sudden, this guy starts talking about, Father, forgive them. He was on one of the standard network programs. Some of you will like it, and some of you will hate it. And then there's a reverse, and the people will switch sides. But the man who was speaking, I discovered, was John Meacham. Anybody know who John Meacham is, by any chance? He's on talk shows quite a bit, and I Googled him. I mean, I've seen him on the programs, and I knew a lot about him, but I Googled him. And because he was talking about the seven last words of Jesus. He has just finished a new book, Hope of Love. The Hope of Love, I think it is. And it's going to be on the market, I think, Wednesday and Thursday, March 4th and 5th. So it's not even out yet. But I heard him speak these things, you know. And so I went to my computer and looked it up. And sure enough, the book is in there. And I looked up his credentials. Yeah, he's not a theologian. He has a bachelor's degree. And he was editor-in-chief of Newsweek at one time. And he was vice president of Random House, executive vice president of Random House. And now he has a real cushy job. He has an endowed chair. You know what an endowed chair is at universities? Somebody gives lots and lots of money, and they have the chair named after them on a certain topic. And this topic deals with social questions, and this particular one deals with the presidency. So he's professor of the presidency at Vanderbilt University. Vanderbilt University is no slouch school. So you can't kind of poke fun at this, but he lectures there and so forth. And he has this idea about the seven last words. And so I would commend the book to you. I went and to Amazon, and they always give you an excerpt, you know, on Amazon. And I read it, and it was really, really quite good. Then I discovered he's written lots of other books about Benjamin Franklin and about Adams and Washington and whatever, because he is a historian who specializes in the U.S. presidency, in the U.S. Constitution. And boy, we need somebody who knows about the U.S. Constitution these days, don't we? Because it's getting trampled on all over the place. So I looked him up and said, wow, that's kind of interesting. And he has some new ideas about these seven last words. Also, I had heard on the radio when I was driving somewhere, I think I might have been coming home from dropping Carolyn off at the airport when she left for North Carolina. And they were talking about the presidency and the seven last words and so forth. And I said, boy, this must be a sign because I'm talking about those things on Sunday. And the text for today, I don't know whether that bothers you or not in any way. My God, is the text. Why have you forsaken me? And in the Aramaic or the Hebrew, which is what he would have said, he would say, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani? Oh, my God. When you think about that, isn't that kind of disturbing? Here's Jesus on the cross, and he is crying out to God here now, in some way, shape, or fashion. My God, why have you forgotten me? Why have you forsaken me? This is the same Jesus who marched through the towns and proclaimed all these things. And here we find him now on the cross, kind of giving it up. Isn't that disturbing? What about this, Jesus? Why are you saying this? What about this? We can understand it very, very, very readily because, you know, we have these problems. We can't cope with these things. But we thought that you of all people, you said these things, you did these things. But now it seems that even you have come to the point where it doesn't work. And where are we going to be left here now? What are we going to do about this? As I say, we can understand it because it is a difficult thing. It's not the way he began when he said, Father, forgive them. That's an admirable thing to do. And we're right with you there, Jesus. Father, forgive them. For they do not know what they are doing. But here in this fourth word, what are we going to do with that? How do we handle it? How do we respond to it? Well, I don't know whether you're aware of that or not, do you know where that quotation comes from? Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, my God, my God. Anybody know? Well, I'm surprised. It's the 22nd Psalm. It's the 22nd Psalm. You can look it up if you want. It's the 22nd. He was reciting the 22nd Psalm. And the person who was taking down the notes heard this word. It was a kind of falling back that Jesus had upon his own religious bringing up. As a young Jewish boy, he would have been saturated with learning from the Hebrew scriptures and the interpretation of them. And he took to that very rapidly and very strongly and very deeply. As a matter of fact, you remember when he ran away and he was debating with the scribes and the Pharisees in the temple. Here's this kid, debating with the authorities. He was quoting the scripture. And isn't it possible, for example, that when we get into difficult straits, this is what we do, don't we? We're pretty good at the God of the crisis. We're not so good at the God of the commonplace. We forget that. The difference between us and Jesus is that he has the God of the commonplace along with the God of the crisis. He has the whole package, and sometimes we kind of only do it when it's convenient and so forth, and we go on our different ways. There was a journalist in the state of Washington years ago who made a comment about people going to church. Oh yes, we have 2 billion or more Christians in the Christian faith in the world. And the problem is they go to church on Sunday, but they'll be all right on Monday. It's just a little game they play. They wouldn't think of asking God to be with them in the commonplace. But God is always with us. Always with us. And another thing I would say about Jesus' phrase, Eloi, Eloi, the O-I, or some in some texts it's just Eli, Eli, E-L-I, E-L-I. The I means my. So when Jesus is addressing God, he is not saying, God, why are you doing this to me? He is saying, my God, my God, you are my God. Why are you doing this? How do I get through this? So he was reflecting on that 22nd Psalm at this particular time, at a difficult time in our lives. And we can all identify with that because at the first feeling of the nail in our hands, we would have capitulated, I'm sure. I'm sure I would have. And Peter and Paul, Paul was not in the picture yet, but Peter and the other disciples, they were nowhere to be seen, only John and his mother. So here in this passage, we have Jesus of Nazareth displaying the fullness of his humanity, that he can experience and feel everything that we experience and feel. In the deepest and darkest dungeons of our lives, he can experience it with us. There isn't anything that we experience that he cannot feel for us. And God is with us in those times, even though sometimes we can't really understand how it is. But our minds are finite, and the finite cannot really capture the infinite, because the infinite is beyond definition. But we can get glimpses of it. We can get parts of it. We can get some positive things out of it. We can get some strength out of it. That phrase, finitum non capax infiniti, the finite is not capable of the infinite. But we can keep trying and keep trying and keep trying. And as we go through the seven last words, and this is one of the reasons I've done this little trip for these weeks. We have spread out between three of the Gospels another sermon like the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus speaks all in one. But here we can put them together and we can see Jesus teaching to us, where he demonstrates the fullness of his humanity and how we can plug into this, how we can indeed also draw from his experience and draw from what he has taught and what is to come, the resurrection. The Christian faith always, it doesn't end with the crucifixion, but there is the resurrection, the triumph at the end. And so, anytime we come together and break bread at the table, I know it's very difficult because we do it on a monthly basis. And you know how it is. It's like, oh, well, I have to go to another meeting. Oh, well, I have another meeting next week. And I have another meeting next week. I have to do this. I have to do this. And we get into these routines. And we miss the vibrance and the vitality of those experiences. And so as we break bread today together, and as we lift the cup together, let us be enlivened to the point where we recognize what this really all stands for, that God does in fact love us. And this is the extent to which he will go, all the way through to the death of Jesus of Nazareth, who is the example of what it means to be a loving human being. And God makes Jesus pay the price for us. And if we respond, we get filled with love and grace. Doesn't mean we're going to have an easy time, but we know always that God is present with us, no matter what the situation is. And that is and can be extraordinarily comforting. I know I've been in many situations that just really scare me to death. And going into them, and as I go in, I always go in saying, God be with me. Let me speak your words of love and compassion and uplift and comfort the person to whom I am going, that they too may be lifted up and strengthened. Let us do that in our Christian faith daily and remind ourselves monthly of what it is that we do. But remind ourselves and then do it. We do pretty well here, but like all of us, we're not perfect. Every once in a while when Carolyn and I have a tiff, she says, oh, well, you think you're perfect. And I said, well, what can I tell you? I'm only saying that today because she's not here. Yes, but it's true. We're not. We are always in the process of becoming. And so the good side of that is we can grow and become richer and fuller. And there's no end to it because God is infinite. And when we come to our meeting with him, we will be infinite with him. So let us come to the table now and join together in the sharing of the bread and the drinking of the cup and being restored and renewed in our faith, so that we can be living examples of that love to whomever we meet. And we don't have to go announce it. Well, I'm doing this because of... No, we just do it. And when you do it, sometime, sooner or later, it will dawn upon people what you've done. And it will make a difference. We can make a difference in people's lives. And I never regret helping that young girl. Besides, she was an English major, and she was really very funny, and a great basketball player, and a great person. And we couldn't see her go back to the schools that would destroy her. So let us come to the table and break bread together. Oh well. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever liveth and believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might find eternal life. And greater love has no man than this, that that person lay down his life for his fellow human beings. God so loved us, and we are therefore also commanded to love one another.